Log Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. I hope everyone had a great day today. I had a very interesting one. And before I talk about that, I'd like to get a little of the housekeeping things out of the way. I'd like to remind you that if you want to call this evening and have a question or a comment with my guest that's coming up, you should call 516-453-6063. And if you have a question or a comment, press 1. If you just want to listen, that's the number to call. If you want to hear some of the past episodes, you go to blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. We will be doing an after show, Afterthoughts, and that will be on Godly Entertainment as well as my YouTube station. Just go to Lenny Godfrey and you'll see everyone has done that. They've contributed to the YouTube station in the after show Afterthoughts. So I think I've covered everything. I look forward also to welcoming my guest this evening. She has been in my life for a very long time, since 1978. I met her at an audition for the showcase of a show called Shuffle Along. And before I introduce her, let me just say that she gave me some information that I'm very proud to say, that this month is the 100th anniversary of the appearance of Shuffle Along on Broadway. And I did not realize how much my life had really been influenced by the ragtime era, because not only did I do the showcase to Shuffle Along, I did a showcase called The Ragtime Blues by wonderful, wonderful Doug Mitchell. And we had a wonderful time, such a great cast that we had, and that really made it a wonderful experience at that time. Mitch Douglas was the author and librettist of a song and book program about the life of Scott Joplin. And in that, I played the wonderful character of Belle. So there's so much connection in ragtime, and I bring that all the way around to introduce my guest now. My guest was the female conductor on Broadway for the Broadway show of Ubi. I believe she also did it in other places, but we'll talk about that to make sure that I'm accurate. She hails from Tupelo, Mississippi, and we'll talk about that. She's married to a friend also. His name is Ron, and she is an accomplished pianist, classical music, as well as the ragtime, and we'll talk about all of those things. And her name, my friend, is Ms. Vicki Carter. Hello, Vicki. Hello, Vicki. Wait, I'll get
you. Can you hear me?
There you go. Now I can hear you. Hello, yeah. Vicki.
Hello, Lenny. How nice it is to be with you and stroll down memory lane. Memories of my life and memories of life with you.
Well, thank you very much. You know, we both have had some very interesting dealings that started with that showcase shuffle along. And we've gone to celebrations and memorials together and weddings together. It's been a wonderful lifetime of memories. And so I just wanted to start off and talk a little bit about the showcase of Shuffle Along, because it wasn't the book show that they're celebrating 400 years now. We did a musical review. So how did that come to happen, Vicki?
Well, I had just arrived in New York in the spring of 1977 and fell into work just immediately. I was doing a show down in the village at Circle Rep Company, and a woman named Julianne Boyd had contacted me about doing some musical reviews with her. So she and I met and hit it off. The first showcase that we did was based on the music of Harold Rome. We did another one based on Harold Arlen's work, and she had this idea to do one based on UB Blake. And so we had a working relationship already with these reviews. And, you know, so we put together the UB Blake showcase, spent a lot of time in his home looking for music. And you know the rest of the story.
Yes. Well, I do. I know that there was a call for singers to come down, and ultimately there were four of us who you all selected. It was Vernon Spencer, Roger Lawson, DeBriah Chapman, and myself. And we had a wonderful run that first night that UB Blake came with Marion, his wife, and we both have had the opportunity to be friendly with them. It was such a wonderful experience because we were both in the midst of history. And then that went on to be expanded and to become the Broadway show, UB. And in UB, there was a brilliant cast that expanded the musical selection. But I always laugh when we talked the other day, because people would say to me, oh, well, you know, you were really featured in that. I went, no, I wasn't featured in that. We got a bigger cast, and a lot of stuff that I did in the showcase, they had to give to a lot of people. So I wasn't in a lot of the numbers because they had to do certain things. They had to spread it all out. But it worked out really well because Daddy and Craven really were my favorite pieces from the showcase all the way through the Broadway run, all the way through when we filmed it. It was just a wonderful experience. Yeah, it was just great. It really was.
Well, and you did a superb job with the material that you ended up with. Absolutely, well, absolutely. And one of my favorite memories is of you on top of that piano with your leg up in the air. And I think, as I thought about this, that if we were to put together all of the publicity and all of the reviews, that photograph was probably used more than any other photograph from the show. It was so striking. And so I have to ask you, can you still get on top of a piano and get that leg up in the air?
I can do it on both sides. Yep. Every day it's an extension. Yes. I can. Yes. It's just something, you know, was in the body, and I've kept it up. Not that I want to do it 8 times a week. Now, I'm not plugging for that, but the extension is there. It's a great extension. And I always enjoy when I see people do it in different dance numbers, you know, to bring it. But the slow extension of doing it and twirling the heel and singing at the same time is a very interesting challenge that I got used to.
Well, you met the challenge beautifully.
Thank you. Now, let's get back to, you said you came to New York in 77, but let's go back, because I want to talk about how music really influenced you before we get to the whole ragtime segment, because there's a little bit of some things that I really want us to talk about with the music. But you came from Tupelo, Mississippi. You were educated where? Tell me. As far as college is concerned, yes.
College. I went to the University of Southern Mississippi.
Right. You and Ron. Both you and Ron,
that's
right?
That's where we met, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I was assigned as his accompanist. He was a vocal major, and I was a piano major, and they would pair up people, you know, so we could get the accompanying experience. I think accompanying now is referred to as ensemble. But that's mm-hmm. how he and I met, and clearly we hit it off, and we're still together 50 years later.
50 years later. But, you know, let's back up a little bit even more. When you were before college, you studied piano, classical piano, but you also played by ear because of the influence that your parents had on you, right?
Correct. My dad was a singer. He sang with gospel quartets in our area, and my mom played piano by ear. She was convinced and determined that it was important to read music, so she made sure my sister and I had piano lessons beginning in first grade. And these piano lessons were what we call traditional piano study, headed toward the classics. I don't recall having any ear training, any improvisation. It was all classic. And I was able to sight read quite well. And with my ear and sight reading, I think I was in the fifth grade when I started playing at our local Baptist church, which is actually across the street from where I grew up and down the street from the elementary and junior high school I attended.
Mm. So it really was very, very early. So, all right, so the music influence happened very early in your life. Your parents were musical anyway, and then you carried on through college. But in college, I remember we were talking, what did you tell them specifically that you wanted to do?
Well, I told them I just wanted to play the piano. That's all I wanted to do. So they listened to what my wishes were and set me up to do that. When I got to my senior year, most of my classmates were going to do student teaching. And I asked the question, why am I not going to a school to student teach? And the answer was, because you don't have an education degree. You have a degree in piano performance because that's what you said you wanted to do. Well, then I asked the question, what kind of job is out there for me? And the answer was, you can teach piano in your home, you can play at a church, or you can get your master's and teach in a college, junior college, or, you know, four-year university. Well, mm-hmm. I was done with school, so I was having none of that get your master's. So I have to say it was a little disappointing. However, during the last year or so in college, because of my sight reading ability, I was invited to come to the theater department and play for their musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where I found my home. That is exactly where I found my home. They were having so much fun as, you know, it was a group of people working together on a theater project as opposed to a classical piano major spending time alone in a practice room.
Yes.
So I just found my niche there, and it worked out well for me.
So now we're on this journey because I've got to get you all the way up to where we are now. So we're on this journey. And now I'm trying to go chronologically here. And so you're out of college, and what decision brought you to New York City?
Oh, well, now I have to go back to just out of college. Ron and I got married right after college. And
okay.
This was in 1971 during the Vietnam War. His number came up. Your listeners who are of a certain age will know what that means, which let us know he was going to be drafted or he could enlist. So he decided to enlist, and that brought us to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And I got a job early on playing in bars and singing. It wasn't even a cocktail lounge, Lenny. It was a bar. And
okay.
I got a phone call one day from this man, and he talked very fast. And he said, I've got a job for you. So I guess I didn't understand at that time that I'm somebody who just says yes to opportunities just to see what happens. Well,
mm-hmm.
It turns out that Fort Bragg had the largest music and theater program of any Army base in the world. If you can imagine a music and theater program on an Army base. So this man gave me the job. I worked for the Army. For some reason, Ron never went to Vietnam, never went anywhere. We were at Fort Bragg for 3 years. That was working out for us. So we decided to stay 3 more years. Now I'm getting to New York. During this time, a new director came to Fort Bragg. He had been with the Bucks County Playhouse for several years. His name was Lee Yop. And if any of your listeners know that name, I'm sure they are now laughing and chuckling with memories of him and working for him.
You should also talk about Bucks County, though. Bucks County, though, is a very well-known regional theater that has cabaret and everything. It's out in Pennsylvania. I just want to place that for people. Now, go ahead.
Yes, exactly. So he was really close to the New York theater scene. So
mm-hmm.
he comes to North Carolina, and all of a sudden, we were doing more musicals than plays. And, you know, I have to say my mother did not raise a fool. All of a sudden, we realized we're doing all these musicals. I'm the music director. He's bringing in choreographers. He's bringing in actors. But he never brought another musical director. So I just started dropping hints to these New York actors saying, I would like to come to New York. And everybody said, oh, come on, you'll do fine. Well, there was one show that we did, and an actor from New York named Michael Zeta came to do this show, and I have to say, he became my mentor. He was one of Bob Fosse's original dancers. So Michael was so positive about us moving to New York. We came up to visit a few times. He introduced me to so many people who were so supportive and important to helping me develop and find my place in New York. And so when the 6 years in the Army were finished, Ron and I just moved to New York. No job, just packed up and moved. I can't imagine how brave and courageous it was to do that at that time.
At that time. Now
yes.
that I've gotten you into New York, we talked about, you know, what you did with Julie at the very beginning. We've talked a little bit about the showcase of Shuffle Along and its history now and its celebration of 100 years. And then the evolution of it going to Broadway. I would like, if you could, I'd like us to hear a bit of the rag that we are talking about. The ragtime music is a very specific kind of music. And we're going to go talk, I want to talk a little bit, though, about Yubi and your experience about him playing ragtime music and the what you need to be successful in that stride piano kind of thing. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, hey, you're right about ragtime having, you know, being an interesting kind of music. Basically, it came from marches. For the stride piano, you need to have a strong left hand, a very strong left hand. I think I developed that by playing in the Southern Baptist Church. And the strong beats are on 1 and 3. The weak beats are on 2 and 4. So if you think about a marching band, like a John Philip Sousa band, the tubas, the bass drum, those parts of the band would play the beats 1 and 3. And then let's say the reeds might fill in on beats 2 and 4. So in doing that, in transferring that to the piano, your left hand is going to play either one bass note or an octave on beats 1 and 3. And then it's going to come up sort of to the middle area of the piano and play a chord. It can be, you know, 2 notes, 3 notes, or whatever your hand can reach. So
What's the length of it, the stride of it? Tell us the amount of keys that you have to be able to reach.
Well, you can do an octave, so that's 8 keys, and that's pretty easy for anyone who plays piano. You know, little children can't do that yet, but as your hand grows, but UB Blake could reach probably a tenth. One time when we were together, I put my hand up, you know, next to his, and I've always been told I had long fingers, but certainly not at all compared to his. His fingers, mine came maybe to just the, like, 3/4 of the way up to his fingers. So that's when I look at some of his music, with that left hand, some that he's composed, with that left hand, it has maybe a tenth, which an octave is 8 notes, but it's then he could reach a tenth easily with his hand.
Well, now that we've talked about it a little bit more, I want everyone to hear a little bit of the Charleston Rag, and here is Vicki Carter doing Charleston Rag. That's what I want you to hear. Thank you so much, Vicki. Now, you see, I just wanted, you know, just a taste of the tempo, the range of what that hand was doing, if you could really hear it a lot, just for the audience to get an idea of what it was. And that was really the beginning of our show, was it not?
Yes, yes. When we were trying to put the material together for what was to become UB, this piece of music, the Charleston Rag, kept popping up, and we couldn't figure out a place to put it. So on our first night of tryouts in Philadelphia, we did not have an overture, so it was suggested that I play the Charleston Rag. Now, I had never played the entire piece. I had played bits and pieces of it, and I think it's about 12 pages long. So I had the music in front of me. It was not memorized. And Danny Holgate, who was the music supervisor on this project, was standing by me turning pages. And at one point, he says, "How many more pages are here?" And I had to say, I don't know. Needless to say, the next night we did have a real formal overture, but the Charleston Rag became, I say, the glue that held that overture together.
Yeah, well, that was at Walnut Street Theater in Pennsylvania you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were there in the summer, and then we came into town, September? Yes. We opened toward the end of September. Yes.
Yeah, September 20th. Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I'm going to leave you, even though I hate to leave talking about all our experiences, because that was really a great time. But we're going to leave you, and then you ventured out and did a whole lot of other things. One of the things is that you played in a lot of, I call the mainstream productions, really classic productions. And tell us about your experiences after Broadway with the Paper Mill Playhouse, because I think, you know, that is another extension of the range of which you play music, and how music has really shifted your life. You know, we go from Broadway, now we're going into Paper Mill is like a regional theater. So talk about Paper Mill Playhouse, and talk about the project also that you did that summer conservatory project. So go on.
So after UB, I went to the West Coast for a few minutes with the touring company, and mm-hmm. then came back and had a child. So we'll talk about that child in a minute.
Then yes, we'll talk about that.
Okay. So, because she needed a backyard, we moved to Maplewood, New Jersey. And I didn't realize at the time how close that was to Paper Mill, which is located in Millburn, New Jersey. Yes. When we moved, Paper Mill was doing a production, and the music director was a gentleman named Tom Helm. Well, I had known Tom for years, but our paths just sort of drifted apart. I say that he went and developed his career in regional theaters as a musical director, and I had a baby and became a mom. But we connected again with Paper Mill. He opened the door for me at Paper Mill, and by the time I left there in the early 2000s, I had done over 50 main stage productions, sometimes as the conductor, sometimes as the associate, sometimes as a keyboard player. And it was the most wonderful experience, the most wonderful experience. There was also a new program that was started when I was there called the Paper Mill Summer Conservatory. And I spent several years working with high school students during the summer with that program. Well, one year, the choreographer came to me to say, I have found the most perfect piece of music for this end of the summer show that we always did. She knew the name of it, but she couldn't find the sheet music. Would I please listen to it and see if I knew it? So she turned on her boombox, and I was able to say to her, not only do I know the piece of music, but that's me playing it. It was the Charleston Rag, and she wanted to use it. So we got a big kick out of that, a big kick out of it. But I felt so fortunate to experience all that I did at Paper Mill. And everyone was so supportive. It was just wonderful, just a wonderful experience. I think the favorite show that I conducted there was Carousel.
Uh-huh.
And then I also went to Pittsburgh Civic Light Opera and conducted a performance there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, now, what about this? But I've read about this Paper Mill Summer Conservatory. Now, what is that? It's a 5-week program that they had? What was that?
Yes, it was. It was created by Susie Spidell, who was the education director at Paper Mill. Paper Mill has always had a hugely successful education department, offering classes all through the the school year. And then Susie thought about doing the summer conservatory. And I was part of, the initial group of instructors. We had some wonderful performers come out of that. Rob McClure, who was getting ready to be Mrs. Doubtfire, came out of that program. Mm-hmm. Matthew Scott, who's been on Broadway in several shows, came out of it. Laura Benanti came out of that. Mm-hmm. Anne Hathaway came out of that program. Susie Spidell really, really put, I think, high school theater on the map in New Jersey. She also created something called the Rising Star Awards that still goes on, and high schools compete for that. It became a joke about Susie that anytime she asked me to do something, I would just say yes because I knew it was going to be a wonderful adventure.
Wow. Well, that sounds fabulous. Someone had a question here, but then they kind of disappeared. So I'm trying to, hopefully that they'll call back again. Now I want you to know something. We've already passed the 30-minute mark, so we don't have a whole lot of time, and I still have a lot of questions to ask you. A question about ragtime and the program that you did. You do a program of three ragtime composers, and was that influenced by your playing Yubi's music? Was it there before Yubi's music? Was it there even before this conservatory? How did that come to being? All right, hold on. Wait a minute. I know I have that question, but there is another question coming. Let me let the audience ask you a question first. Hold on. Please state your name and your question. Hello, welcome.
Hi, my name is Erica.
Yes.
And
hello,
I want to know what it was like for. I wanted to know what it was like for Vicky to work with the only African American producer on Broadway.
Oh,
you're talking about Ashton Springer.
Ashton Springer.
Yeah, I'm talking about Ashton Springer.
And where are you calling from, Erica?
Well, I'm calling from California. My name is Erica Abbott.
Okay. Hello, Erica. Go ahead, Vicki. Mm-hmm.
So what was it like for you, Vicki, to work with literally the only African-American producer on Broadway?
It was a terrific experience. I felt like that he was supportive with everyone involved. He created such a terrific atmosphere so we could all do our work to the best of our abilities. I will tell you this. I didn't realize at that time that the importance of Ashton Springer in the theater and the Broadway theater. I really didn't know that. I didn't have a education in theater before I came to New York. I mean, the one high school musical a year, the one college musical a year. And then I started working on Yubi so soon after I got to New York. It's only through the years that I have really been so filled with gratitude that I had that experience working with someone like Ashton Springer.
I think it's important, and thank you for that question, Erica. I think it's very important that people realize that Ashton was in a position by himself for a very long time. There were a couple more that were coming, around, but it was Ashton who really had done Bubbling Brown Sugar before and had done, and he had worked with Woody King a bit also. There was a legacy and a lineage that he had created, and working with him, as you worked with him behind the scenes, working with him as a performer and being really closely out of college, I thought he was one of the most supportive people of my work because he had nothing to go by except for what I did every single night, and he encouraged that. So he was absolutely wonderful to work with. Now,
well,
I'm going to go back.
Look, can I add, may I add something else about Astrid?
Sure, sure.
You know,
please.
With that showcase, I had no guarantee that I would move with this project. And I didn't expect to. I do remember doing the showcase that this major producer was coming to see the show.
Mm-hmm.
But because of, at the time, my lack of experience and my being new in the city and knowing that he had done Bubbling Brown Sugar and he had a track record, mm-hmm. I didn't even give any thought to going along on this project. So I appreciate very much his effort to take newcomers and give them a chance.
I agree. I totally agree. I was in that same situation myself, that he could spot talent and he knew exactly what he wanted to do with it. And he was relentless with it. And I think we both benefited from that, from his sharp eye. He was, I guess, supportive until he left here for me, and I got a chance to call him up before he passed away and to thank him for the amount of support that he provided for me at that point in time. Now, I'm going to go back to the question I had, and that was about ragtime, the program that you do. It was about ragtime music and how that influenced what you do now in concert, what you do, how you speak about music when you speak to young people. Tell us about the program that you do, first of all, that does encompass ragtime music. And then and tell us how that affects how you think about music now.
I'm trying to figure out how to make a long story not quite so long.
Well, you only have 20 minutes, so, you know.
Okay, I'll try to talk fast. So, as I had mentioned before, I feel like I have been an ensemble musician with the accompanying, the working with theater, working in orchestras, so I never had a solo career. Maybe around 2012, a friend of mine from Mississippi had said to me that I should come and do a program for her music club. And Lenny, I heard myself saying, oh, I would love to do that. I heard myself thinking, Vicki, you don't have a program. You don't do solo programs. But for some reason, I did not let those words come out of my mouth. And I spent a year putting together a solo program. My husband called it my cabaret act. Because you know how actors will put an act together and do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I needed to include my Broadway experience. So there was the Charleston Rag, and it really is the snippet that you heard is only 30 seconds of 12 pages or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I started building this program around the Charleston Rag and then decided I would add Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag,
mm-hmm.
and William Bolton's Graceful Ghost Rag, because those three rags are so different. Scott Joplin is your standard ragtime that I was talking about earlier, based on the marches, similar to the Sousa marches. Well, Ubi Blake's rag, the one that you heard, the Charleston rag, it uses the stride piano later. What you heard was what's referred to as Yubi's wobble, wobble, left hand. He took what we know as an ascending boogie-woogie baseline, and he created a descending with those octave jumps. There's a story that his mother wanted none of that ragtime in her house, and he would sneak out at night and go play piano in a brothel. Well, one of his mother's friends came and said, I heard you be playing down at, I think her name was Aggie Shelton brothel. And Mrs. Blake said, no, not my son. And the neighbor said, well, it was, because he's the only one who has that wobble, wobble left hand. So his signature motif got him in trouble with his mom. But then the graceful ghost drag does have some stride, but it uses many more chromatics and more interesting chord progressions and chord voicings. So the three of them make a nice grouping for ragtime. So in this program that I do some classical and talk about the composers, and then, you know, there's this ragtime segment, and I talk a bit about the history of ragtime. You know, I think it's part of the Mississippi River. If you want to know the history of American music, all you have to do is go up the Mississippi from New Orleans on up through St. Louis. And ragtime was really a part, a major part of that history.
Well, all right. I'm going to move you a little bit further because I have a note that you directed something. And tell me about that experience.
So when I was at the height of my career, maybe not the height because we have different components in our careers, but I had become local girl makes good in my hometown. So the community theater in my hometown of Tupelo, Mississippi, applied for and received a grant and invited me to come there and direct a musical. They had already set their program for the following season, and there was one musical listed, and the musical was Showboat. Well, my network of friends in New York said, Vicki, you know, they just want you to do the music for it. They don't want you to direct the show. And I said, no, I think they mean direct the show. And, Lenny, I did not have any directing experience. I did pay attention when I was working on shows. Well, my friends in New York said, we will help. You say yes, and we will help. So Bruce Pomahawk, who was a colleague and at that time worked for Rodgers and Hammerstein, gave me so much guidance. Julianne Boyd helped me set up a schedule, this, that, and the other. So I headed down to Tupelo, Mississippi to direct Showboat. Well, except for a production many years prior of To Kill a Mockingbird, there had been no people of color in any production at this community theater. So here I am. And I'm so grateful for having the UB credit, because with that credit, I had so many people come to audition for that show. And it was the most wonderful experience. There was a male quintet from one of the black churches who came. So there was the centerpiece for Old Man River.
Wow.
And these men bought into it, others followed. So it was just an experience that that I knew was special when I was being able to do it. And I'm so grateful for having had that opportunity.
Well, I'm, you know, that is a discussion all in itself, because it's an interesting show historically. And one day I'm going to break down how you decided to direct certain things, but we don't have the time for it now because we only have about 10 minutes left and I still have some other things to ask you. Yes, yes. See, I told you it goes. You're involved now. There are some projects that you're involved now that I think people need to know about. There's a project called MEND. Explain to us what MEND is. M-E-N-D.
Meeting Essential Needs with Dignity. Some years ago, I'm really not so involved with it now, but some years ago in my local church, they needed someone to serve as a liaison between the church and this organization. So I raised my hand. I said yes. And at the time, it really was focused on food insecurity in our community. And then it became focused on other things, diaper drives, back-to-school supplies. And I became a member of the advisory board of MEND for a few years. And the organization is still going strong. I've been a member of a group here in Essex County called Impact 100 Essex. The idea is to get 100 women to commit to pledging $1,000 for the year, and that would go to a nonprofit. Well, the chapter here in Essex County has 120-plus women, so that means a $120,000 grant. And so pleased that last year, MEND was the recipient of that grant. I just can't say enough about the good things they do right here in our community.
Yes. Well, I remember that one year we all wanted to give you gifts of something for your birthday or something, and you really asked all of us to contribute to MEND. So because it does service the homeless community. Am I not right? You know, the shelters.
It has food pantries. It doesn't really. It doesn't provide housing for the homeless. Mm-hmm. I think I'm correct in saying it that way.
Necessities and accessories. It does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Many times
they will do a drive for period products because there's been studies that women can't afford to buy sanitary supplies and they miss work, they miss school. So many times an organization like MEND will do a drive for those kinds of products.
I find it's very interesting. Not too long ago, an organization that I belong to that's an all-women's organization, over 40 for writers, did an evening on actually women and how they deal with having the period. And one of the plays dealt with a homeless woman trying to explain to her children how to economically afford the things that you need monthly in that area. And it's a subject that I had never even thought about, that there were people who really had that issue, that you go to the store, you get what you have to do, and you keep on going. But this particular play really focused in on the fact that there are people in our society where that is an issue and that we need to pay attention to it. So I thank you so very much for being involved in that. And this last thing that I want to ask you about is that you were involved in sorority. And
yes,
you were involved in creating a program in your sorority, and I, please tell us the name of the sorority, because I never get those right. That is it, Alpha, the Alpha Omegacron chapter, where
yes, go ahead.
Yes, where you got involved in it. It was beginning to peter out, and you got involved in it by creating a program that infused it more with music. And if you can, in the next 3 or 4 minutes, Vicki, 3 or 4 minutes, tell us what that program was, because I'm going to have to wrap this up. See, I knew this was going to happen, but I'm going to have to wrap it up. But tell us what you did to enhance that chapter.
The sorority is FIMU. It's a national chapter, a national sorority, college, Greek organization. Our chapter was called the Alpha Omicron. I sort of left that sorority life with college, but then as an adult in New York, I wanted to network and make some friends, so I joined an alum group in New York City. And at the same time, the national organization was looking for a music chair. So I tossed my hat in the ring and was elected that. What I discovered was that by that time, there were not that many members, college members, who had music backgrounds. They weren't majoring in piano as much. The arts was just sort of disappearing. So I proposed a project and recorded, went into a studio with some other women, and we recorded all of the music that was part of this particular sorority and created, at the time, cassette tapes and did arrangements. So it was just more accessible to the collegiate chapters to have a good quality of music. So that was the project that I did.
That's now, there's a question. I'm going to welcome the caller in, and we have just enough time, I believe, for them to tell us the name, where you're calling from. Hello, your name, where you're calling from, and your question, please. And welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser.
Hi, my name is Debbie, and I'm calling from New York City. I'm interested because we have such a seasoned pianist here, and I'm fascinated by the things you're talking about. But I'm interested in how you feel about YouTube, because I do have nieces and nephews who have children, and they're saying, oh, you can learn anything that you want to learn on YouTube. And I'm thinking, well, I have a problem with that, because I can't imagine that you can learn how to play the piano without a teacher being in front of you. Now, I understand that that's probably good for children who live in rural areas and can't really get to a school or get to a teacher, but I really do think that there is something to having a teacher around to teach you the right fingering and the right skills that you need to become accomplished at playing an instrument. Just wanted to know what you felt about YouTube and how children are learning different things today through the computer.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm in agreement with you about a teacher, a one-on-one teacher-student relationship. There are all sorts of available programs that can enhance what is going on between the student and the teacher, especially theory programs. And when you mentioned YouTube, I will tell you where my mind went immediately before hearing the rest of your question. When I was growing up, if I was assigned a piece of music, let's say a Beethoven sonata, I had to go to the music library, find the record, and find it on the record. With YouTube, if I want to learn something, I can go listen to 20 pianists play that piece all differently and form my own opinion. I do think that putting young people in front of the computer for an initial introduction to learning the piano is not a bad thing. But I would say if that student is expressing any interest or talent, that student needs a private teacher. Because it's not just about the notes, it's about the fingering, as you mentioned. It's also about learning to produce a beautiful tone. There's so much involved in it, and the muscles in your arms and hands. And yeah, so I'm big on that one-on-one teaching.
Well, thank you, Debbie. Thank you so much. You know, now we're down to the last bit, and we didn't get a chance to talk about your daughter, and I really must get her in here somehow. I thought that I was going to get a chance to talk to her, but I don't see her listed here. So talk to me about your daughter and the name that you have and why we both share an experience with this name.
Well, her name is Logan.
Yes.
I had met and worked with Josh Logan.
Yes.
And I can't really say that she was after him, but he thought she was. And he met her several times. In fact, we did a big production down in Florida, and I was there about a couple of months, and she was with me. She was a toddler at the time. Well, he just loved having this little Logan running around.
He was a dear man. He was a dear man, yes.
He was.
Yeah, my experience with him was wonderful as well. You know, Vicki, I'm going to wrap this up because we have less than a couple of minutes left. I can tell you that I am so glad that we got an opportunity to talk a little bit about our time together and then some of the many wonderful things that you have done. Hold on for a second. I think somebody might want to talk to you. Hold on for a second. Hold on. Let me see if I can. Hello, welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Hello.
Hi, this is Logan.
Yes, I thought it might be.
Well, I sat here in the other room of my mother's apartment and listened along to everything you guys were discussing, and I didn't want to interrupt, but as soon as my name came up, I figured it might be time to interject.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that you were on our minds, and thank you. And remember, I knew your mom and dad before you existed, and it's so wonderful to know that you're here with us and got a chance to say something on the show. I love you dearly. You know, I'm very glad that you are taking care of my friends. You're a wonderful daughter, and thank you for that, Logan, really.
Well, I love you too, and I'm so glad that I've gotten to be around you a little bit more in the recent years. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to know you as an adult, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'm also very grateful to be able to be with my mom, and I'm just
right.
So happy that you're doing this and that she's participating.
Well, thank you. Thank you. All right, ladies, I'm down to a minute, and I'm going to say thank you very much for coming and participating in this, Vicki. Next week, I have a wonderful guest. His name is Patrick Brogan, and he's the Chief Programming Officer of ArtsQuest here in Pennsylvania. So he's got a lot to live up to, but I'm sure he'll try his best. But we have 90 seconds. With you, Vicki, I think that it's going to be time for me to bring you back because we haven't finished all of our conversations. What do you think?
Well, I'm happy to do that because I love to talk, and you are so fun to talk with.
Well, thank you so very much. I'm just going to play a little bit more of what you did and then play us out. All right, and here it is again. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.